The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson, in for Trevor Dan again this week on the Radio Today programme. Later, we'll have another fabulous trip down memory lane with David Lloyd and his radio moments, plus a roundup of this week's news from across the radio industry with Roy Martin. But my guest this week is a multiple award-winning journalist and broadcaster who, after 20-odd years in radio, is about to leave us and head for the glitz and glamour of TV. She's got a daily news and current affairs show to host, no less. And she started out in commercial radio before moving to the BBC in local radio and then on to Five Live in the late 90s. She's then spent the last 16 years there. And in the last decade, she's been building up both audience and awards for the Trophy Cabinet in the mid-morning slot. She's the current Radio Academy Award-winning Speech Broadcaster of the Year, Victoria Derbyshire. Victoria, welcome to the Radio Today programme.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to talk about your early career in a few minutes, but just a couple of weeks left for you now at Five Live. How are you feeling about leaving radio for a little while?
I would be incredibly sad if I was never going to do anything for Five Live again. But because I am immensely grateful for that. And I don't feel as though it's as much of a wrench as it could have been. I adore Five Live and always will. It's always going to be in my heart. Our listeners, the station, obviously, I'm going to listen to it, but I'm still going to appear on it. So I'm really, really grateful for that. So, yeah, ready. I'm ready for a new adventure, I'll be honest, but I'm always going to cherish my time at Five Live, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that I've interviewed over the years and some of the most amazing people that I've ever worked with.
Listeners to your show at the moment know something that you do well is giving people, kind of real people, a chance to tell their story. So let's have a quick look at your story. You brought up in Lancashire, went to Bury Grammar School, Liverpool University, then a postgrad degree in radio and TV. Was that always the plan? Did you want to always be on radio or TV?
No, I think when I was about eight, I wanted to be an actress because my mum was really into amateur dramatics. So I used to help test her on her lines. So I was quite into that. Then when I was a teenager, I wanted to be a barrister because I thought I was good at arguing. Then when I got to university, I started to write a little bit for the university newspaper, just, you know, film reviews, theatre reviews, book reviews, that kind of thing. And I wasn't very good at it, I didn't think. I wasn't a very good writer. But that's when I thought I wanted to be a journalist. And because I wasn't great at the writing, I realised then, you know, looked around and thought, right, OK, so you could do radio and TV journalism. And then obviously towards the end of university, thought, OK, this is going to cost. So I needed to work for a year. So I worked for a year, saved some money, and then did the postgrad at what was then Preston Poly, which is now the University of Central Lancashire, and had a brilliant year, made some fantastic friends, people I'm still friends with now. That was over 20 years ago. And then eventually got a job.
And you got to have a good go at doing some radio and some telly. You obviously preferred the radio more than the telly, did you?
Well, I don't think I think we were very realistic. It was really competitive then in terms of trying to get into broadcasting. It was competitive to get on the course for a start. And then the idea that there would be jobs in television was just ridiculous. We all knew we were going to work in radio and we were all delighted with that. We all hoped we were going to work in radio. Goodness, some people didn't get jobs for ages. That's what you do. If you want to be a reporter, you work in local radio. And if things go according to plan, you work your way up and you try and get a job in national radio. And, you know, eventually I did.
So that first job, that was BRNB, is that right?
That was my first proper job as a reporter in local radio. And
when was that, 90s?
Let me work it out. So I was at university 86 to 89, then a year working. So I did the postgrad 91 to 92. So yeah, 92, 93.
And that was presumably quite a big time for BRNB, early 90s, before there was a massive influx of radio stations. It was massive in Birmingham, wasn't it?
It was massive. And, you know, in commercial radio terms, clearly the commitment to news is slightly less than BBC local radio, but they used to care about getting stories and care about getting them first, and that was, you know, really important to me and to them. So in terms of that job, I was there, as far as I remember, I was their only reporter. You would be out you know, scared and worried and anxious that you needed to get this audio and get it back to the station ASAP because you wanted to be the competition.
But the competition with the BBC, and they had a lot more resource, I guess.
The competition was BBC WM. I'm now colleagues with some of those reporters from WM when I was at BR&B. I see them around the BBC now. And they had more reporters, definitely. And also, they had much more airtime to fill, let's be honest. They were doing speech programmes with odd records, as they were then, thrown in. We were mostly music with 5 minutes of news every hour.
Obviously, after BR&B, you then went to the BBC eventually, to Coventry, and then on to GMR after that. How do you look back on your time in BBC local radio?
It was interesting in that there were obviously more resources. There's much more airtime that we needed to fill. It was satisfying in that if you did an interview with whoever, there would be time to play it on the breakfast programme that morning, which was great. I worked with some really talented people, brilliant producers who, you know, sort of helped me craft packages in a way that you never had the opportunity to in commercial radio. And then I suggested to the station manager, a guy called Andy Wright, who was a superb manager who isn't alive anymore, that could I present this one-hour programme called that I suggested could be for people in their 20s. I called it 20-something, and it was for, you know, issues that affect you when you're in your 20s, trying to buy a house, relationships, coming out, that kind of thing, with music from my era of the 80s. it was really poor. But it was a good little training ground, you know, just to try and sort of relax on the radio. The first one I did was so well produced, it was like a documentary. It may as well have been pre-recorded. You would never have known it was live because I was so nervous and scared of saying something wrong or whatever. And then did a bit more presenting and then got to do the lunchtime show, which is a mixture of news and some callers and music. That was a two-hour show. And in those days, I could, from the computer, select whichever track. You weren't supposed to, but I used to select whichever track you wanted. So I loved George Michael's version of Freedom, which is 9 minutes long. So I used to play that on a regular basis. And I would be dancing around the studio, having the best time, never mind the listeners. I was having a great time in the studio.
So you went to breakfast at GMR, then 1998 came along and a move to Five Live. How did that move come about? Is it a job you applied for? Did you get headhunted? How did that work?
No, I was going to be doing a once-a-week show. I piloted to do a once-a-week show on Five Live on a Sunday called The Media Show. And I was successful. And because I was successful, I thought, I wonder if the controller would let me do any other programme. So I sent him a cassette. And got a call from him, or his secretary, I can't remember. I think it was him, actually, Roger Mosey, saying, would you come down to London and have a chat? So I said, yes, of course. So I came down and met him, went into his office at Broadcasting House, and he said, would you like to stand in for Jane Garvey on the breakfast programme? Jane is going off to do a TV programme for a few months. Would you like to be her dep for a bit? And I could not believe it. It was astonishing. I was so happy. And I did not expect it at all. And that was that.
And you stayed there 5 years on breakfast?
I did stay there 5 years on breakfast, yeah. And I was my co-presenter was Julian Warwicker. We had the best time. We had such a laugh. He was wonderful to work with. I loved the team. I didn't mind getting up at 10 to 4 in the morning. Even though I'd been getting up early on GMR, I was doing the breakfast show there with Jim Hancock. It was just that time in my life, late 20s, no children, being in London, working on a station that I adored. I'd always listened to Five Live when I was at GMR and thought, God, I'd love to work there one day. So it was just, for me, it was just amazing. I loved it. Made some great friends, had some fantastic nights out, including some all-nighters, and then turning up at work the next morning to do the breakfast programme thinking, I am going to be sacked, but I never was.
And on that time on breakfast, I think you won a couple of gold awards, a couple of silver awards, and a bronze at the Sonys as well. That obviously then helped you get perhaps your own show when breakfast changed a bit. Nikki and Sheila took over, and that's 10 years ago this summer that you started on mornings.
How did
you find that difference?
Well, I started the programme in August 2004, and the first programmes were at the Athens Olympics. And I just had a baby, so I'd come back from maternity leave. So I found it quite, it messed with my head a lot. presenting on your own, having been in a partnership for 10 years on different, you know, Five Live and GMR before that, and a newborn baby. I'd probably come back from maternity leave slightly too early. However, I felt like it took me a really long time to find my feet. I didn't really know what I was doing for a number of years. You know, sometimes I still don't now, but I don't have that same terror as I did in the early days.
The show has developed a lot over those 10 years, and certainly the last few years, you've been doing some quite innovative things, kind of firsts. So taking the show on the road and going to animal testing labs, rape support centres, doing OBs that are live on the news channel as well. Has that kind of spurred you on to want to do more of those things, the more of those that you've done?
I think so. I think there was a part of the team that wanted to do things that hadn't been done before, or difficult or challenging, shine a light on difficult or challenging areas of British life. Because you can't, you don't want to keep doing the same things. There are certain debates and areas of, you know, the nation's talking points that are incredibly familiar. So in order to justify our own bit of the licence fee, you need to bring something different. You don't want to super serve groups of Britain with the same subjects over and over again. So it was self-interest in that we wanted to be challenged and do something different, and also thinking we can't, you know, we don't want to be repetitive. We don't want to do what somebody else has done, or another programme has done, or another station has done, or another TV channel has done. So that was part of the drive, I think, behind that.
How much influence do you have on those ideas? Obviously, it's your name above the door on the programme. How much is down to the team? How much is down to working together with them and you coming up with ideas?
Well, all of us. I mean, you know, some of those OBs were my former editor's ideas, Louise Compton. Some were people on the team. We did an outside broadcast from a second home. Do you remember when the expenses scandal first hit? We did an OB from the second home of a Labour MP called John Mann. I loved it. That was my idea, for what it's worth. But it doesn't matter. You know, it's those kind of things that I would say our listeners appreciated, because it told them something they didn't know before.
You said earlier on, obviously, you'd wanted to be a journalist and initially thought of a print journalist. Do you now see yourself as a journalist or as a broadcaster?
Journalist.
And that's about wanting to tell the stories and get information across to people, is it?
That's wanting to draw information from people. That's wanting to listen really carefully to what a guest is saying to me. And that is wanting to, therefore, allow listeners to make up their own minds.
16 years at Five Live, I've worked out as well, 16 Sony Awards you've won in that time. Remarkable achievement, really. Probably better than many other speech broadcaster over that the last decade and a half. 5 gold, 8 silver, 3 bronze. Do you remember any of those nights out?
Of course I do. I really do.
What was the biggest year for you, do you think, at the Sonys?
I think the first gold Sony that we won on Breakfast, Julian and myself and the team, and the editor was Kerry Thomas, was amazing, because, you turn up at that Grosvenor House Hotel and you walk in and it's just like you've seen on the telly, those awards ceremonies, and you cannot believe it. With the chandelier and the beautifully dressed tables and the beautifully dressed guests. I think winning a gold award a few years ago, I can't remember when it was, for this programme, for the 10 till 12 programme, in the news and current affairs category. And I remember we were up against a couple of programmes on Radio 4, news sequences programmes on Radio 4. We felt really delighted with that, because some people don't necessarily view us as a news and current affairs programme, because we don't have the traditional format. So that was really satisfying for us as well.
That was 2011. I think you got gold in news and current affairs, silver in speech programme and silver as speech broadcaster.
Silvers from that year, by the way, I was on the same table as Robbie Savage. He dumped the silvers in an ice bucket.
But, I mean, it gives other people a chance next year if you're not going to have a daily radio show, I guess, doesn't it, if nothing else?
Well, that's very kind of you to say that. But, yeah, of course.
Let's bust a couple of myths. The news of you and Sheila leaving Five Live opened this discussion quite quickly in some sections of the media about women on Five Live and it being bad news because there's not going to be a solo female presenter. Five Live's done quite a lot for women over the years, hasn't it?
Women have done quite a lot for Five Live over the years, haven't they? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Jane Garvey, first voice on the station, obviously yourself and Sheila, Gabby, Rachel Burden, Asma, Anita, Eleanor. The list goes on. I don't know where this criticism came from, just because, you know, they're swapping you for Peter Allen.
Well, I think it came from, and it's a statement of fact, that you know, at the moment there are 10 hours of radio presented by solo women, and there won't be that much in a few months' time. There will be.
Does that matter?
It's up to the listeners, isn't it? I think, you know, I've said before, in an ideal world, you'd have a broadly equal representation, wouldn't you? As a controller, you select who you think will be the best person for that programme. Jonathan Wall's decided it's Adrian Charles Monday and Tuesday, and Peter Allen Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and in the afternoons, Dan Walker with Sarah Brett. That's up to him, and the listeners will be the final judges, won't they?
Something else that's probably got you a lot of coverage in the last few years has been the word Salford. What's your side of the story?
What do you mean, my side of the story?
Well, there was these pictures in the papers of empty studios and saying Victoria Derbyshire's refusing to go to Salford, the rest of the station have gone, why can't she go too?
Do you think I'd be allowed to refuse?
No, I don't think so, so I'm giving you the chance to tell
this us. Is what happened. So what happened? I was commuting every day to Salford, and after several months it became really hard. I don't want anybody's pity, it was just knackering, and I was trying to get back to pick the children up in time for 3 o'clock. And I said to the then controller, Adrian Van Claveren, I said, I don't think I can do this. I'm really sorry. It's going to make me insane. At which point he gave me permission to do some days in London and some days in Salford. And Jonathan Wall continued that arrangement.
Guests and correspondents on your show are all over the place in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. So does it matter where the presenter is and where the guests are?
When we were at Broadcasting House in London, when we were at TV Centre in London, when we were at Media City in Salford, as you rightly say, the guests are everywhere. In an ideal world, you'd like to be face-to-face with your guests. I think that can make a difference. Not always. I don't think it matters where anybody is, to be perfectly honest. As long as you've got the best guests, the most creative treatments, people that you don't hear elsewhere on media outlets, I think that's what counts to listeners.
What do you think you'll miss most about not being on Five Live every day?
That's a really good question. Because there are similarities with the new programme. I would say that connection with our listeners. I feel like I know our listeners really well. I've spoken to so many of them. I have met so many of them at audience debates, on outside broadcasts. I suppose I will miss... Yeah, we'll be missing the listeners the most.
And that connection, even if you're doing the same kind of topics, you don't really get on the telly, do you?
Ah, you wait.
And is there anything you can tell us about your new show? What's it going to be like? When's it going to be on?
It's hopefully launching towards the end of the year, November, December time. It's 5 days a week. It's a couple of hours. It's going to harness a lot of new technology so we can have direct conversations with the audience in the way that you don't really see in TV domestic news at all. Breaking news, as you'd expect, from the BBC News Channel. Exclusive interviews, impact interviews, and lots of outside broadcasts. Plenty of audience debates. And some of those will be simulcast with Five Live. I mean, I'm doing a programme next week from Dundee, 2 weeks before the Scottish referendum vote, which is a joint programme between Five Live and the BBC News Channel. So we'll do plenty of those things as well.
Is it daytime?
Yeah.
On in the evenings?
Daytime.
When we might expect to see you?
Daytime. I don't know what time yet, but during the day.
And you mentioned, obviously, that you're not really leaving Five Live for good. Are we going to hear you popping up still on the network?
Yes, in those joint enterprises, those simulcasts, then definitely yes.
And if you've got one memory from 16 years doing daily radio shows across the country, what's that lasting memory for you?
That's almost impossible, because I have met so many amazing people. I could say staying in the hostel in Walsall with some amazing women who'd come back from prostitution and drug addiction. It could be talking to Rachel, the alcoholic anaesthetist who sadly died this year. It could be talking to a guy we called Dan on air who had been, as he described it, broken by HMRC. It could be the young guy in his 30s who rang me to say that he and his wife were having a baby. IVF finally had worked, and they hadn't told anyone in their family. They told us first. That is, you know, that I was in a really privileged position to hear that kind of intimate news from a listener. That you cannot. I'm never, ever, ever going to forget some of those conversations. Obviously.
Wow. Well. Good luck with the new show, and the RTS Awards better watch out, I guess.
Please, give us a chance. It might be rubbish. Thank you, Stuart.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Stuart, in for Trevor. David Lloyd's Radio Moments are on the way. But let's get this week's news first with Roy Martin.
Jonathan Ross is back on BBC Radio 2 covering for Steve Wright this week. He's received a mixed reaction on Twitter from what we've seen, and most people have welcomed him back with open arms. Don't get too used to him, though. The BBC has pointed out that there are no plans to bring him back permanently. Yet. Profits are up at UTV Radio GB for the first 6 months trading of 2014. Operating profits are up almost double from 4.4 million to 8.6 million, thanks in part to the additional football coverage on Talk Sport. And if you're interested in seeing radio people throw ice and water over their heads instead of using them to keep their drinks refreshed and their bodies hydrated, you can see a roundup on our website. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I am Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
We start this week saying a big happy birthday to this chap. He's 60 this week.
Rise and shine, wakey wakey. It's coming round to 11 minutes to 8. Radio 210 coming at you. 210 metres medium wave, 1431 kilohertz, 97 FM in stereo.
I'll read out your letter, especially if it's unusual or funny. And I also have some historical facts and funnies relating to that date. And maybe, with Uncle Ted's permission, we could tie it in with a little oldie that relates to that date 5 years ago.
Happy 60th birthday, Steve Wright, in the afternoon.
More people listen to Steve Wright in the afternoon than all the other radio stations combined.
Simon Dee died this week 5 years ago at the age of 74. He was the first UK presenter really to graduate from radio to stardom and TV. But like so many stars, he rose and fell.
This is Simon Dee talking to you on behalf of all of us on Radio Caroline, here 4.5 miles away from Felixstowe.
Listening to the live programme from London, it's just coming up to 12:15, and here with Midday Spin is Simon Dee.
Thank you, Brian. Hey, you made that last, didn't you? Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. No time, no sig. Unbelievable first record.
Simon Dee, who died this week in 2009. 25 years ago now, and a new voice on breakfast for Key 103.
Anyway, here we are, we've arrived, the fabulous new breakfast show. The only thing I'm not happy about is the fact that they changed the programme schedules just in time for winter when it's very dark outside. Getting up at 4 in the morning when it's at minus 58 outside. You're not stupid, are you, Grundy?
Steve Penk had his first breakfast show on Key 103 this week at 89. Happy birthday, too, to Southern Sound, now Heart, which launched this week.
It's 7:45 on Monday, the 29th of August, 1983. Welcome to Southern Sound. The Southern Sound theme, written by David Arnold and played by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
The majestic launch 31 years ago of Southern Sound. Radio Durham was one of the BBC's shortest-lived local radio operations. It opened in 68 and then closed this week in 72 as its resources were transferred to Radio Cumbria. Enjoy here just a snippet of what happens when a caller is confused by one of the newfangled answer phones.
Welcome to Radio Durham, Britain's only county radio station. I'm sorry no one's in to take your call, but if you have a record request or a news item, please record your message and start speaking now.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, yes?
Is that Radio Durham?
No, it isn't. You to give you a message.
Oh, I'm never bothered.
It's an answer.
You must listen to the whole call. It's on my Radio Moments Audio Boo channel. Radio Durham remembered. This week in 1990, Radio 5 began on the old Radio 2 AM frequencies. It was sport, kids and education.
You're listening to BBC Radio 5 on Monday the 27th of August 1990 as the clock ticks towards the launch of Britain's first new national network in 23 years on 909 and 693 AM. T-minus 90 minutes and counting.
Yes, I'm going to be with you for the next hour and a half at least with good music, as we've just said. Special guests include Paul Gazza Gascoigne, now there's a name you know. Mark Curry, of course, is with us today. Stories and quizzes with sounds like this.
The start of the BBC's fifth national channel this week, 24 years ago. It became Five Live 4 years later. From the press cuttings now, what have we got? We've got the Times, 23rd of August 1973, so the time at which Capital Radio was getting ready to go on air. Headline is Capital Radio incurs IBA disapproval. And the report goes on to say plans for Britain's first commercial radio stations have started uneasily. Details of programmes released by Capital Radio last week had not been approved by the Independent Broadcasting Authority. Capital held a press conference at the Café Royal on Regent Street. At the weekend, the IBA was asking why it hadn't been invited. When it comes to scheduling, Sunday tea times for the chart now seems pretty obvious timing. But Pick of the Pops didn't start there. It started on Saturdays, moving to Sundays at 4, and then 4:30 this week in 67.
8 weeks in the Pick of the Pops top 20 so far, and the last four at number one for America's Scott McKenzie's San Francisco. And right now in Pick of the Pops, it's competition time. And what a shock result, Pop, because you'll never guess it. Remember last week we asked you for number 15 in this week's Pick of the Pops top 20? Well, it turned out to be Ichiku Park from Small Faces, and at the time when the competition closed, we had not received one correct entry, but there is a reason. Small Faces were at number 14, and we all thought they'd zoom towards that top 10 the following week, this week as a matter of fact, but they didn't. They came down. This week's number 15, Ichiku's Park from Small Faces, and of course, nobody is the correct winner. But I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll have two record vouchers in this coming competition for next Sunday. We'll go into the top 10. Number 5. See if you can find out number 5. Send those entries to Pick of the Pops Competition, P.O. Box.
Unmistakably fluff on Pick of the Pops. Changes to an LBC this week, 22 years ago. The AM service, then called Talkback, was relaunched. The station began broadcasting separate shows from 5:30 in the morning till 9 at night.
Hi, I'm Tony of Nottingham Gate. Or rather, I should say I'm Tony of Kensington, because actually it there is. Sometimes if I feel rather like pontificating, I call myself Tony of Kensington, and if I feel like being a little rambunctious and controversial, I call myself Tony of Notting Hill Gate. I like the variety, I like the controversy, I like people like me phoning in, if you like. I rather like the unpredictability of it. I like certain presenters. I love to hate certain presenters, and that surely is the secret of good radio, is that you love to hate the same people. It's rather a cosy hatred.
London Talkback Radio. It's everyone's favourite conversation station.
BBC news bulletins are now part of life, but until this week in 1939, they were only broadcast in the evenings after 7 o'clock, thanks to a deal with the newspapers. But with war looming, the BBC began broadcasting daily morning and lunchtime news bulletins, and newsreaders were named for the first time to make sure people knew they were genuine.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the midnight news for today, Sunday the 11th of March, and this is Alvar Liddell reading it.
So with the first ever heart conversion, as Century 106 became Heart East Midlands this week 9 years ago, XFM acquired by Capital 16 years ago, and BRMB staging the ill-fated coolest seats in town 13 years ago, those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Thanks, David, and thank you, Roy, as well, for the news. And thanks also to our special guest this week, Victoria Derbyshire, and to BBC Radio 5 Live for allowing us to use their studios at New Broadcasting House, and IPDTL and Kevin Leach for hooking us up online. Now, next week, we'll hopefully see the return of your regular host, Trevor Dan. Thanks for all your kind words and feedback over the last couple of months while I've been looking after this podcast. And don't forget as well to check out our previous editions if you've missed any over the summer while you've been away. Perhaps they're all at radiotoday.co.uk/podcast. My name's Stuart Clarkson. I'm at Stuart Clarkson with a U on Twitter if you want to connect with me on there. Thank you for listening. I'll maybe pop up in your ears again soon. You never know.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.